This session will be Dr. Tracy Finlinson, and she is from San Diego State University, and her topic, is dental utilization by Hispanic agricultural worker families, and welcome.
Thank you.
Can I just hit the arrows?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just hit the arrows when you move on.
Great. Good morning. So I'm presenting some research that was part of the UCSF Center to Address Disparities in Children's Oral Health, or the CANDU Center. And so happy to present this on behalf of Stuart Gansky, Sarah Shane, and Jane Weintraub, who's here in the audience today. We have no disclosures to report, but I did want to acknowledge all of the sources of funding that made this study possible, so NIDCR, NIOSH, and the California Endowment. In California, there's a very, very large agricultural industry, and we are one of the largest producers for the nation of a lot of major fruits and vegetables, and the California farming business is quite large and profitable. So in 1999, there was over $26 billion worth in sales from crops and livestock products in the state. And the families, the agricultural workers and their families that work in the farms here are a very distinctive group. Many of them are foreign-born, not all of them speak or read English. Many live in poverty, some are undocumented, and some migrate along with the crops that they're working. It is a very unique group of individuals, and by and large, we know that they are underserved and have many health needs, but there's not a lot of research documenting specifically what all of their needs are, despite the fact that there are several federal and state programs that are aimed at just providing healthcare services for these populations. We don't know as much as we really should about their access to care, utilization, what their health status is, and what problems they experience. A few years ago, there was a major report on California agricultural workers and their families in the state of California. And I've copied the cover here. The report was called Suffering in Silence. And if you do a quick Google search, you'll be able to find the PDF. But I wanted to summarize some of the main findings from that report. It was a 1999 survey, and it was the first statewide survey of agricultural workers and their families. And it focused on health status and needs in particular. They were able to estimate that there's a total of about 700,000 agricultural workers in California. And again, the characteristics, many were foreign-born, many of them were young males, many were married, Hispanic, and had very little education, only 6 years or so of very formal education, and very, very poor. The average annual incomes, this is in $1998, was $7,500 to $9,999, so very, very low incomes. About half of the sample did have children, so family to take care of, and only half reported that they could read Spanish very well. For most of them, Spanish was the predominant language. And what that report found was that there were very, very low utilization rates for dental services among this population, and about half of that sample had never been to the dentist at all, but dental problems were the most common health complaint. So clearly, there's a lot of need here, potentially, and a greater need for better understanding what can be done for this population. Many of the other agricultural worker samples in the literature, a lot of research supports all of these findings as well. And nationally, we are trying to increase the proportion of individuals who are able to access dental services. So our current study is nicknamed MICASA, the Immigration to California Agricultural Safety and Acculturation Study. And it was a large population-based cross-sectional epidemiological study. The University of California, Davis was the one that started following a cohort of these agricultural families in California. they were able to follow about 421 families, and the UCSF dental component of this study sort of piggybacked on the UC Davis larger study. And to be eligible for the dental component, families had to be part of the MACASA study and have one child under the age of 18. They had to reside in Mendota, California, the primary city of the study. Don't know if that's me. And all of the families that could participate in the dental component had to also work, have one member that worked in agriculture for 45 days in the last year, and be self-identified as Hispanic. So it's a subset of the larger MACASA study. So Mendota, California is in the Central Valley, and we were able to collect information in 2006 and 2007 on 326 adults and 485 children. And so there were some adults and some children that only got a survey, some that only got an exam, but the majority did get both an exam and a survey. And most of the surveys were conducted face-to-face by a bilingual interviewer, although most of the interviews were conducted in Spanish. And all of the families received $15, a $15 gift certificate for each participating family member, as well as a toothbrush for participation. And since we are investigating dental service utilization, we were using the Anderson Behavioral Model of Health Service Utilization, also known as the PEN model. So looking at predisposing, enabling, and need factors as influential factors relating to whether or not services are obtained. So predisposing factors are typically sociodemographics, but can also include perceptions and beliefs about care seeking and about the healthcare system. Enabling factors are all of those resources available to the individual to help them obtain care. So typically things like income, having insurance, having a dental home. And the need component includes both subjective as well as more objective evaluated health status. The main outcome that we cared about in this particular study was whether or not an individual had a dental visit in the past year. And this particular analysis focuses on adults only. So we had three different models. In the first model, we looked just at the predisposing factors: age, sex, marital status, years of education, number of days worked in agricultural in the last year, number of years in farming, if they have a dentist that they would go to as a source of dental advice, and their self-reported overall health status. In the second model, we had an acculturation scale. The ARSMA is the acculturation rating scale for Mexican Americans, and it is a battery of 12 items, and individuals rate if they like to read, speak, watch TV, see movies in English or in Spanish. So it ends up rating the orientation and acculturation of the individual. We asked about income, number of residents in the household, dental insurance status, and whether or not there was a regular source of care. In the final model, individuals self-reported their oral health status relative to others, their subjective need, if they felt that they had dental care needs at the moment. We had the oral health impact profile, a 14-item scale, that asked about if there were certain problems, what was the impact? Did they have any pain? Did they feel self-conscious? Did they have problems with meals due to problems with their teeth, mouth, or dentures, those kinds of items? We included a factor to account for number of teeth lost due to disease, as well as number of symptoms. So there's a battery of 12 different symptoms that were queried. In the final analysis, we used a generalized estimating equation logit regression model. We had several adults that may have been in the same family or same household, so there was some clustering that we had to account for. We conducted several descriptive analyses, and we did three nested models. So first looking at just the predisposing factors, then the predisposing plus the enabling, and then finally looking at predisposing, enabling, and need factors together and the influence on whether or not there was a past year dental visit in this population. So the next few slides characterize the sample. These are the descriptives. So we had 326 adults So all of the descriptives are based on the full sample. When I get to the regression models, those are a slightly reduced number due to some missing factors that some missing information. So for all of these numbers, this is based on all 326 adults. So on average, they were 36 years old. A third of the sample was male. Two-thirds were married. Very similar to the statewide results, only about 6 years or so of formal education. Most had worked in farming about 126 days in the last year and had been in farming for about 12 years. A third named the dentist as the individual that they would go to if they needed any dental advice. Some of the other possible response options there were asking friends, family, doctor, promotora, other sources, but we were interested in particular if they would go to a dentist for dental-specific advice. And about two-thirds of them reported having just fair or poor general health relative to others. The acculturation scale indicated that most of them were very strongly Mexican-oriented, so preferring to speak in Spanish, read in Spanish, watch Spanish TV. And again, very, very low incomes. We have different income brackets here, so about a third of the sample, their annual income for the family was less than $10,000. About half were in the $10,000 to $20,000 range, and 20% were making over $20,000, with an average of about five individuals in the home, so not a lot of money to support a lot of people. 67% lacked dental insurance. Those that did have it, most of them had Medicaid. And almost half did have a regular source of care. The need factors, a majority, 71%, reported fair, poor, self-rated oral health relative to other similar others. 86% reported having a dental need at the time. And the OHIP scores indicate that they seldomly had some troubles due to problems with their teeth, mouth, and dentures. There were 30% that had no missing teeth, but there were 12% that were missing six or more, and a little bit more than half that were missing one to five teeth, and there were 4 out of 12 symptoms reported on average. This is the overall breakdown of symptoms. Most commonly, individuals reported having sensitivity and stained teeth and bad breath. There were fewer on the far right-hand side that had the more severe problems of broken teeth, toothaches, loose teeth, or abscesses, but still a significant proportion. And there were about a third that had visited the dentist in the last year. This is the breakdown for when they last went to the dentist. In the first model, the only predisposing factor that was significant was if the individual felt that they would go to the dentist to ask for dental advice, they were much more likely to actually go to the dentist in the last year. When you add in the enabling factors, we see that positive relationship with asking the dentist, but not having dental insurance was an indicator that the individual would be less likely to have had a visit in the last year. But having a regular source of care, so having a dental home, was positively associated, so the individual was more likely to have had a visit in the last year. And in the final model, we see the two relationships again about asking the dentist and having a regular source of care both being very positively associated with a dental visit in the past year. Dental insurance was no longer significant in this model, but the number of symptoms, and this is very interesting, the more symptoms that people reported had an inverse association with the outcome. So the more symptoms the individual had, they were less likely to actually have had a visit in the last year. And so in conclusion, there were a lot of individuals that reported dental symptoms in this sample. 12% had never been to the dentist at all, and there were a few predisposing, enabling, and need factors that were associated with dental visits, as I just mentioned. And ultimately, we're going to need to work to increase access to care to this population. There are symptoms and needs that do need to be addressed. Many are underinsured, do not have any insurance, and so we might need to consider policy changes to try to address that issue to help facilitate access to care. And there might be other language barriers and issues not addressed in this particular analysis that should be noted. I also wanted to mention that there's another poster being presented tomorrow morning's session also on this study. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Now we have time for questions, and I think what we'll do is I'll start the questions off, and then we can continue. When you do ask a question, please speak very loudly so everybody in the room may hear the question. Okay, the first question I would like to ask is Ms. Masterson, for the papoose method, do you find that, okay, if these children already have fears, does this present greater fears after that because of being wrapped up to have procedures done? If you want to answer, you can sit or however you want to do it. Yeah, use the microphone. Okay. That way everybody can hear.
Okay, so this, the dentist, can everybody hear? Yeah. This scope of the study was just regarding the dentist, and they did not discuss particularly kind of long term when children came back what their reaction was to the papoose board. But our other research in talking to the caregivers about this treatment method used on their children, the use of the papoose board, suggest that some kids, they're afraid, and they remember that and don't want to come back. But then there are a few who seem to say, there were a few dentists who said that when the child comes back, they see the papoose board, and that is then used as, like, they don't want that to happen. So they seem to think that the child then cooperated, as they got older and understood that if they cooperated, they wouldn't have to be strapped down to the papoose board. However, our research in talking to the caregivers suggests that that isn't the case, and the children, their fear was perhaps made worse by the use of it.
Okay.
Are these for me still? Or?
Are they for her?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay, Amos?
On that same topic, the unmanageable child who has commercial insurance, do the dentists take those kids, or do they farm them out also? Are they willing to deal and put up with the insured unmanageable?
Yes. I from our discussions with the dentist, I believe so, because their time spent with that child will be compensated for with private insurance. Is that, yes?
You can bill by the minute?
no, but the problem with... the problem with the public insurance is that a lot of times the reimbursement is per service, and so the child may come in and they may spend an extended period of time trying to treat the child and not succeeding, in the however long that may take, and the service hasn't been completed.
Okay.
Judith, let's let Judith say something.
Commercially insured children who have particular kinds of needs that were beyond the scope that the dentist felt they could successfully treat were certainly referred out, but generally they were prepared to do more trials and spend more time with the kids who were going to have their time reimbursed.
Okay. Did any of the dentists express like a lack of comfort with using the papoose board? You said it's the most common one, but fear arousal is widely known to be unethical, like when it comes to behavior.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Fear arousal is not the most ethical way to influence self-behavior. I mean, that's what I've learned. And it's the most widely used thing that people support. That's what she said, I think. And so I was wondering if they expressed any discomfort with using it or forcing the child to be strapped down or anything like that.
Yeah, as I mentioned, this was very controversial, and we spoke with 25 dentists, and that they were general dentists. These were general dentists, and so amongst the general dentists, the papoose board was the most frequently used. I don't think you would find the same thing in talking to specialists. They would probably, if qualified, prefer to use something else. Does that answer your question?
Okay.
Oh.
Who's next?
Did it bother you at all that there were only 25 dentists? The sample size is so small?
Well, this was meant and was approached from a qualitative, you know, which is a qualitative study. So the goal of the study was not to actually, you know, have the numbers of who is doing what, but to understand why they make the decisions that they do and follow those patterns. I mean, hopefully, eventually. In place right now, I'm not sure. We're still kind of going through the findings from this particular study.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe the sample that you selected? Because you referred a number of times to clinics, and I thought I heard you say at one point that these were QHC clinics. Were they all?
No. From our sample, more of the rural dentists were working in a federally qualified health center. There were some as well in the urban sample, but there were also private clinicians who did accept the majority of their patients were DentaCal patients.
I'm asking patients. That because you were referring to being paid by the procedure, and clinics are not paid by the
procedure. Right, and so there were, we discussed this further in the paper that the report we're working on. The point I was making about the per service was that when the reimbursement was per service, that the dentists discussed the reimbursement not compensating, not being worth their time.
Okay. John?
We dentists are not considered to be the most self-reflective people. I didn't hear any mention of the deficiencies of the dentist in this situation. There clearly is a huge deficiency in training in the United States. When so many general dentists are unable to provide what amounts to general dental treatment to a normal range of behavior of a stressed child, which doesn't require advanced techniques. And the dental schools are completely failing in this regard, mm-hmm. and the over-specialization emphasis is encouraging it. This raises costs and actually reduces care. Mm-hmm. And never will be enough pediatric dentists, and the academy needs to be constantly reminded of that. Did any dentists in this survey actually express some of their own limitations in coping with what amounts to a normal child?
I'm sorry, their limitations in treating a normal child.
They're just reacting in a normal
way. Oh, I see. Yes, and there's other, in the literature, there's a lot of discussion that, you know, these advanced techniques are not taught in predoctoral.
I'm talking about treatment that only requires a simple understanding of normal child development and behavior and apply that kind of management that requires no advanced technique.
I would say that there's different levels of comfort between the dentists, and the ones that have less levels of comfort would refer more quickly, and those that felt more comfortable trying these different things.
Make them a little more comfortable.
We agree.
Okay. Back there.
Speak up. Criteria used to determine if the children were unmanageable and were all the children as their normal behavior for their age group, or were there some special needs children in the mix?
I didn't hear the beginning when you said what was the. Well, those were kind of the three things I went through and discussed that oftentimes, not all, but many dentists, if the child walked into the clinic and knew they could just see that they were, you know, very young, they weren't going to sit still in the chair, they were immediately considered challenging. And unmanageable would be, you know, if they had tried a technique, whether it was just trying to make the child feel comfortable or actually using, you know, nitrous oxide or the papoose board, and that didn't work. That was an unmanageable child.
Okay. Scott?
I know we're drawing close to the end of our time here, so before you talk about like continuing education, I wanted to invite everyone to our oral health reception this evening at 6:30. It's going to be in the Marriott Hall, Salon 1. And on the floor plan on page 26, it shows you how to get there. You go down the lobby level in the Marriott here, and go down the north tower and then across to the next building, which is the Marriott Hall. At the same time, our reception tonight, which is also going to be our business meeting, at the same time tonight is the APHA
award ceremony, and so many of us won't be able to be there at the award ceremony. And one of the recipients of the J.S. Drotman Memorial Award is Dr. Tracy Finlayson. Stand up, Tracy. The award recognizes a health worker or student aged 30 or younger who has demonstrated potential in the health field by challenging traditional public health policy or practice in a creative manner. So I'm going to take this opportunity on behalf of the Oral Health Section to express our congratulations.
Do we have more questions for the panel? Yeah, Famous.
I'd like to ask those of you who are working with the Latino population, how many of those Latinos are living in communities that have fluoridated water, and what percentage are drinking that water, or are they all distrustful of the water?
Both of the areas of our study, both the rural location and the urban location, did not have fluoridated water in the majority of the water sources, and on top of that, they were not drinking the tap water anyway.
So they would refuse the water even though it had fluoride in it?
It did not have fluoride in it, but
and
even if it did, they were not drinking it. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I've been waiting for a while. I have questions for two of the other speakers. One question for Marisol. In your quality of life instrument, you had a category that said more or less. That sounds a little vague to me. Does that translate better in Spanish? Can you just say something about that category?
No, actually, the...
Stand up. Why don't you come up to the microphone, please, so everybody can hear.
Yeah, it may be a translation issue, but the instrument, all the questions are in Likert format, and one of the categories is more or less.
Because other instruments like that, it's like good, fair, poor, and here in the sort of the fair category, you have more or less.
So like no opinion,
like more or less than
what? No, it was, for example, excellent, good, more or less. I would have to check the original version in English because it may be a translation issue. Más o menos. So the exact translation would be like that, more or less.
Okay, repeat that.
The first speaker, you showed that there wasn't any difference in untreated caries between border and non-border children. Did you look at the extent of the caries experience, the total DMFT or DMFS? Does there have less untreated caries in the border group, and they may have more filled teeth in the non-border group? And there could be differences in treatment philosophies, especially if some are getting Medicaid, some are not. Have you looked at that issue at all?
Yeah, the questionnaire collected more information on the treatment urgency of the untreated caries. So it was because that would be the more urgent health issue. So I think, for the filled caries, really it was whether they had any filled caries, but not really or teeth, not how many and the extent. So there wasn't any sort of gradation there. Yeah, you know, unfortunately, the way that the screening survey was done, it was just a really quick survey, decay filled missing, that sort of scale was data was not collected in that manner. It was just a yes or no, right? So, yeah, exactly. Wasn't.
Yes.
Speak
up, please.
I have a question about the number of dentists that you put up. And if I remember correctly, about 60% of them were Asian, is that correct? Is that interesting to you? And I'd really like to know why that is. If 60% of these Asians, half of your places are FQHCs, are they actually at the FQHCs or are they in private practice?
Who's the question to?
I think it's...
Okay.
A lot of the students are from UCSF Dental School, and the majority of our students are Asian.
Yeah, and
right.
Yeah, we don't.
I'm just wondering because I don't know the
Okay. So it's the California population.
We did think that was interesting at first, and then we did find that actually the proportion of dentists who were Asian in our sample actually reflected the area as far as our urban, where we did the interviews in our urban area.
The urban area we did, yeah.
Then it was a little less interesting.
So most of the Asians were in the urban setting, but not necessarily in the
No, they're both.
There were Asian dentists in the rural setting as well. So it really reflects the population of dentists in that, so the northern to central California region.
So there were, you're saying there were more Asian dentists in
California. Okay.
John?
I have a question for Dr. Finlayson. I just want to be sure. This Anderson model is a model, the way I understand it, it's a model of dental care utilization. Right. So this is, we're not attempting to describe oral health here. We're just attempting to describe those the sort of significant factors in understanding dental care utilization.
Right. So the outcome that we looked at was focused on access to care and actual utilization in the last year. But the last component, the need factors, did address oral health status a bit because we had information about if they felt they had dental needs, what sort of dental symptoms they had, and their overall oral health rating. So we did have in the study information about their oral health status from the clinical exams, but that's not... that wasn't included in these models. So the focus was looking at access.
Question for the first speaker.
Talk loud.
If I recollect clearly, did you have a parent component that was included as part of the...
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah.
So the question is, did the basic screening survey have a parent component? So a parental permission form or consent form was sent home with the students. And as part of that consent form, Dr. Say can correct me here or corroborate this because he actually administered the survey. But there were quite all of the questions for Medicaid status, or is your child on free or reduced lunch, those were asked to the parent. So that was self-reported by the parents. No, this year we are actually doing a similar survey in the Head Start, younger children 3 to 5 years of age in Head Starts, and we still trying to limit the questionnaire to one page, so it can actually be Spanish on one side and English on the other, but we have asked some more questions about dental care utilization, if they have visited a dentist in the last year, and actually asking them for the name of the dentist, but we didn't ask where the dentist was located. Or we didn't ask any questions about language or acculturation.
And my question is, why not? and I don't mean to put anybody on the spot, but you don't have to answer that. It's okay. But I think that's very, very important.
Okay. Question.
This is about to the gap between research and program. There were several questions that we wanted to ask about acculturation, but it was just came down to the pragmatics of having a questionnaire that was one sheet of paper and one side English, the other side Spanish, and portability. There were a lot of other questions that we didn't that we wanted to ask.
Okay. We have a question.
So that's an excellent question, and the regional dentist or dental team really responsible for the border areas in Texas, he feels that that there is a really high Medicaid participation rate on the border, and that dentists are there are more dentists accepting Medicaid on the border, but that's more anecdotal, so that sort of deserves further study. Good question.
Okay. Any other questions?
It also depends on where you are. There's urban areas of the border, there's also rural areas of the border, so I think that the next step would be to analyze the within border variability. So.
Okay, we'd like to thank you for attending this session and coming back. And you can get your continuing ed points. Just fill out the two forms, the yellow sheet and the white sheet, and turn it in then. Yes, it's the dentist. It's the continuing ed forms for the dentist and hygienist. Okay, they're free. They're all in the back. And let's thank all the speakers. Pardon me?
Oh, yeah.
You can't hear it? Okay. It's all on.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
guess. Well, that should be making noise, and it's not making noise. Okay.
Oh, here it is. So it's not working. Oh, you know what? No, here it is. Is that another one? Is it shoot at you? Yeah, I'll grab that. Perfect.
Okay.
Who knows?
I mean, it was all lit up.
Yeah.
So I probably when we moved, when it kept getting moved. Okay, now it works.
Dr. Merchant Johnny. Sorry, I was so hungry. I thought I can't hear you. I'm eating candy in the morning. Oh, I was worried about that. Can you bring out Russian nuts? And I was like, oh, where? Oh, that's yeah. You know, I had that refrigeration. And they ixnayed it, and it was like,
thank you, Sandra.
Oh,
thank you. You're very good. Where are you? I'm Sheldon at Lower University. Okay.
I'm like looking at people's beds. I'm sorry, I left my.
Oh, you're also a dentist, right?
No, a dental hygienist.
Dental hygienist, right? But I have a doctorate in dental hygiene and healthcare management.
Is that the University of Illinois?
No, no. This is down in Carbondale, Southern Illinois University.
Oh, okay.
Basically, two
from St. Louis. Oh, I was going to say it's on the border of Missouri. Yeah.
We're not on the border.
We're
it comes down to the point, you know,
for
Illinois,
it's like a big state. Now, is it a public health or dental school? Or?
No, it's dental hygiene is a bachelor degree program there.
Or but where you, you're in faculty?
I'm a college of applied science.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a section in the university. And we have healthcare management. We have physician assistants.
Oh, well.
We have radiology and physical therapists.
Okay.
We have all kinds of areas. Our dental school is in all buildings. So they're 2 hours away from us. They're up by St. Louis, and then our medical school is up in Springfield.
Wow, so this is more like a school of LA professionals.
Well, no, because we have technology, we have aviation, everything. This in the school is a lot of different colleges, in it, and the university itself is about 21,000
22,000
students there. So
it's
hi, good to meet you.
Hi.
Scott.
I used to be at CDC.
Oh, okay.
I'm not any longer. I hope you can correct that slide table.
Yes.
And you may need to check on the website who to contact about submitting a new presentation.
Okay, because I know it's going to be available for...
Yeah, because it'll be available online for those people that pay the extra money. And I didn't see whether you had acknowledged the CDC funding.
I did not, and I should
that. That needs to be on one of your slides.
Okay.
This was supported by CDC cooperative grant number
okay.
or
I'll get
whatever
that.
It is. You can get that from Linda or
yep,
Sandy.
Yep.
And then the other thing, even the first survey wasn't a convenience sample. It was a representative sample, but
of those
the
schools.
Population of
right.
schools with
right. In fact, it was
with
not
greater
even,
than 50%
yes.
free and reduced lunch.
Yes. And so it wasn't really even a sample. I think it was.
Did they do all the schools?
I think they did
oh,
all
okay.
of them. Yes. No, that's a really good point.
Okay.
So,
yeah, I was the one who insisted that Texas go back and do another sampling so that they would have a statewide representative sample of the whole state. Because that's what the the National Health Surveillance System is
yep.
based on.
Exactly, and then this, so we can
and
submit
they, and Linda and Sandy told me, well, we wanted to understand our schools that were the target for our SELIN population. And I said, that's great, but for this cooperative agreement, you also need to get some data that you can then have on the National Health Surveillance System. So
right, exactly.
I hope that's in the plan that,
oh, yes,
that you'll be,
so
once you get it
yes.
analyzed, that you'll be submitting
we
to ASCD
that. Yes.
So that it can get loaded on
yes.
CDC.
Yes, we need
website.
To upload that. In fact, yeah. Linda and I have already talked about it, so it's all on me.
Okay. Nice meeting you.
Are you at the university?
No, right now I'm just a private consultant.
Oh, okay.
But I used to work at CDC, and I was one of the ones directing the cooperative agreement.
Oh, okay. I just finished my EIS about a year ago.
Oh, really?
And then I came to Texas. And I actually did my EIS in Maryland at the health department there. So oral health is new to me, but I'm really enjoying working with Vivian.
Okay. So EIS, were you at CDC
no,
and then
I
went
was,
to?
I was at state, at the federal assignee to the state of Maryland. So I
thought you had to be in at CDC for like a year. Or so.
No, it's funny. I guess a lot
I
of
didn't
folks
know
say
they
that
had
to
that
me,
sort
but
of, distance option.
Yeah, no, you have the option of doing it at headquarters or out in the field for your 2 years. So I did 2 years. I mean, of course, you come back for all the training and I did like, you know.
EIS. Now, was this the EIS or was this the Public Health Prevention Service?
No, I did EIS.
EIS.
Yeah,
okay.
I finished my PhD and then did EIS. Yeah, I think
okay.
PHTS is like 3 years, I believe. They
yeah.
do like an extra. And they,
yeah.
PHTS, they do 1 year at CDC and
then go out.
And go out. But
yeah.
EIS is like straight 2 years either at.
Oh, okay.
Either
I didn't know they did that. I thought it was all at based at CDC.
Yeah, well, it's like 75%. Most of the
yeah.
folks are at CDC, but I think for those of us who know that, we probably won't go at CDC if we get experience. Get out, or vice versa. But
yeah, I felt bad about saying, you know, you got to do another round of data collection. I was hoping they could like sample so that they could just sort of fill in the gaps and combine it into one big data set. But I guess they decided that wasn't really feasible and that they would need to just resample.
Yeah, and also the time period, because I think, you know, it also stretched from 2000.
Yeah, that's
two,
true.
It was two school
two
years,
school
and I think
years.
That was, it was two things. It was
oh, that's
one
right.
was the representativeness and two the time.
Yeah.
And so
for the NOHSS, it has
yes.
to be done with
like one cross-sectional. And so I,
yeah, you're right.
Aaron
yeah,
had,
I
Aaron Sage, who was the oral health epidemiologist uh-huh. before me, uh-huh. Had designed this, and so it was a, State Weber, so
good.
I can
tell Linda and Sandy I said
will,
hi,
I
and that it's great to see the survey results coming out.
Yeah, it's exciting, and we're
I'm sure you'll have fun kind of analyzing the differences between the two
yes.
survey pools and
yep.
how they compare and that type of thing.
And there we're good. Doing Head Start. How long
great.
Were you at CDC?
I was there about 10 years.
Oh, wow, okay. Were you in, you know, you're in private practice?
Or? I'm just doing some consulting.
Yeah, in general. Yeah. Are you a general dentist?
I'm a public health nurse.
Okay, yep. So you're not doing clinical?
Not right now. I might go back and do some, but I haven't decided yet.
Well, it's good to meet you,
yeah,
Scott.
Nice
thank
again.
You.
So the instrument was not administered, it was handed out in return. Is that how it worked?
The parents survey was on the show. So they had to come to the
Let me say hello. I have seen you at Forever Surgery. How are you doing?
It's equally not.
Marjorie, good to see you here. It's really, I always expect you to show. It's half of it, right? 90%, according to Woody Allen. 90% of life.